Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Okay, I'm back. This is kind of crazy. All right, so what happened was we had a power failure, and as you can probably imagine, a power failure takes us right off the air. And so I got to call in the gym. Hopefully he'll call back in. I sent him a direct connect, and so everything that I had just got wiped out. And so we'll just continue. We'll do a little split episode here, and if I have to talk to myself for a little while, that's okay. But we're back, you know, and so Action Radio will continue. So as soon as Jim checks in, we'll get on with that. I've scheduled like a couple hours, but I'm not going to go that long. I'll go a little bit past 9 o'clock, and Derek's not here, so we have some time to chat. You know how much time Jim has. Shirley probably got cut out. And for those of you that don't know, we're back on the air. So here we are. And so let me see if I can get Jim to come back. Otherwise, I will just continue on and talk about some of the other things we had. Probably take people a little bit of a while to figure out what's going on here. So let me play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. Let's do that right now. And in the meantime, I'll be texting everybody and see if I can get them back on the show. I'm going to play this. Anyway, this is Santa Rosa Volunteers number 30, Federalist Papers number 11. I will start this and I'll be back with everybody else soon. This is Greg Penglis. Actually, I'm going to hold it up. Jim's on the line. So let's get him back, and then we'll see maximize his time, and then I'll play our Santa Rosa Volunteers piece in a bit. Jim, I'm glad you found us back again. I had a power failure.
I did.
And everything just went.
That's what live radio is all about, right?
Power failures. This is what it is. It's like unlive radio. It's like lack of live radio. Radio just went.
There you go.
It's kind of funny. Anyway, so we'll see if anybody, Pianchi will figure it out, Josh probably. Shirley, I don't know because she had to go anyway and teach a firearms class, so she's probably gone. So when we last left our exciting episode, what the hell were we talking about? And it was good. We were on a roll.
Yeah, so we were finishing up talking about Florida Department of Agriculture and the candidate who had, mm-hmm. had left. So that's the one little negative piece that I have in some interesting positive pro-Second mm-hmm. Amendment news from around the country. We have in Oklahoma, the Oklahoma State Senate approved a measure, and I don't know that it's gone to their House yet, that would prohibit any state contract from being signed with any business that discriminates against a firearm entity or firearm trade association.
Love so it. How'd that happen?
Apparently, Oklahoma is going to try to out-Texas Texas.
Do they have a rivalry? I mean, I didn't really think about that, but they're sitting right above Texas. And Texas gets a lot of notoriety, a lot of people, a lot of folks moving from California, you know, hardworking, industrious people that don't want to be in a socialist bastion. They're all going to Texas. But how many are going to Oklahoma? And do they feel a little cheated, maybe a little, nasty stepbrother or whatever the sort of, you know, off cast off of the family? What's going on in Oklahoma? I don't know it that well. I've only been there once.
Yeah, I don't know it extremely well. I've been there a few times, but I think a big rivalry within, you know, Oklahoma towards Texas. And, you know, I think part of it is the fact that Texas is so much larger, gets so much more notoriety and their neighbors. But, you know, Texas last year passed a law that prohibited financial institutions that discriminate against gun companies from participating in the state's mutual bond market. And so, you know, my kind of back of the envelope look at this was Oklahoma looked at that and said, well, we can do one better and passed their law that would prohibit any state contract for any business that discriminates against a firearm entity or trade association. So,
well, isn't this
I thought that was interesting.
No, it's very interesting because you look at the trend has always been like the banks, you know, when one bank said they weren't going to, you know, have loans for firearm businesses, they all kind of jumped on the bandwagon, you know, the woke for broke crowd, as I'm calling them, the idiots, you know, the woke is a joke crowd. And so they're trying to out-woke each other. And I don't like that word, but I use it for convenience. But now we have just the opposite. And we've always felt that, you know, the offense is the best defense. And so you have to go after these folks. You have to create a different situation. So now pro-Second Amendment, pro-Constitution, pro-freedom, pro-free market people are now finding creative solutions. You can't discriminate against these people. And it's a really nice trend because this is fairly recent because it used to be conservatives would sort of like lay down and take it and complain, you know, as I say, raising complaining to an art form, but not really doing anything about it. And now you got a state like Oklahoma that's going to do more. If you look at some of the laws to change abortion laws, you know, one state will have a heartbeat law, then another state will do it, and then Texas has one that's even stronger, and Missouri or Mississippi, I think, has one, and they're all headed for the Supreme Court. But at least the states are doing something. The states are acting like states. They're doing what the states are supposed to do, and they're taking the offensive, you know, in terms of freedom. And so whether it's abortion, whether it's Second Amendment, whether it's whatever the cause is, as long as they're advancing freedom, I'm all for the states doing it. And I think this is a great trend.
Yeah, it was interesting to me because I had not seen any state who had done anything this broad and wide-reaching. And it's good to see a state actually stepping up and protecting businesses, which are a core to a constitutional right like the Second Amendment. So, you know, good on them for there. And then kind of on the flip side, San Jose has recently passed an ordinance which would require a mandatory tax and mandatory insurance for anyone who owns a firearm in San Jose. And so there is at least one, and I think there might have been a second lawsuit already filed. The one that I'm aware of was filed by the Firearms Policy Coalition. Mm-hmm. Challenging that ordinance. And even in California, I think that ordinance is going to be found to be unconstitutional. I mean, it's...
Mercy says, even in California, folks.
Even in California. That shows you just how unconstitutional it is.
Well, there's another thing coming out of California. Let me pull it up here on my screen. It's not a Second Amendment thing, but California is having a law. In fact, the whole show, I'll be talking about this when you have to leave. But this massive campaign to get rid of what governments are calling disinformation, which we call choice. And California bill, let's see if I can find it here real quickly, bill text AB2098, called Physicians and Surgeons Unprofessional Conduct. So if you talk about hydroxychloroquine, if you talk about the injuries and deaths caused by vaccines, if you talk about anything that they don't want you to talk about, they're calling it misinformation, unprofessional, and they're taking away, you know, doctors' license. And this is how they're getting around it. So you will, because it's almost like national health care by default of prosecution for practicing medicine that they want to practice it. And especially if you're helping people. You know, if you don't put people on the remdesivir ventilator death march, as I call it, they're going to consider that. So it's professional to kill people using the government policy of remdesivir ventilators, but it's unprofessional to give them an early treatment. This is how bad it's getting with the control of information. There's California and the surgeon's bill.
Yeah, and it's actually counter to everything that medicine is supposed to be, right? You're supposed to trust doctors to use their experience and their expertise to prescribe whatever treatment in their professional opinion is the best treatment for their individual patient, which is why, you know, you have doctors who can prescribe medicines oftentimes for something other than what the medicine was created for by the pharmaceutical
Rogaine.
Company
Rogaine.
Or for what it was approved for by the FDA. Yeah. You know, remember, we expect that doctors are experts in treating people and making them healthy. And so we grant them that latitude to use that expert opinion in new and creative ways to help save lives.
Do you remember Rogaine? It was originally heart medicine, but it grows hair. So guys are taking Rogaine. I think Viagra, which has that other effect, that started off as something else too. It was like a heart regulator or I forgot. But Viagra had a different purpose than what guys use it for now. But it's fascinating how that works. But here's the thing about medicine. And I learned this from Dr. Zelenko. Dr. Zelenko has been on the show. He's the one that wrote the letter to President Trump, the last lawful president we've had, about the virtues of hydroxychloroquine and how it saved his Jewish community in upstate New York. And so, and it was fascinating. I had him on the show. We've written a bill reforming the emergency use authorization procedure of the FDA. He's endorsed our bill on full product liability for vaccine manufacturers. But he basically experimented. He got his information from Didier Raoult. In Marseille, France, and I was the one that broke the story March 2nd that chloroquine, which is the earlier form of hydroxychloroquine, I guess it, without the hydrogen and the oxygen atoms, snuck on there, that cures COVID. And so we were already announced that there's a cure for COVID. So I was sharing information. Dr. Raoult was sharing information in Marseille. Dr. Zelenko was sharing information. It's like, hey, I got my community up here. We got something that works. This is great. Hey, everybody, try it. Okay, fine. So the point of it is that doctors talk to other doctors. And then when one doctor finds something that works, they get to broadcast it to all the other doctors and say, hey, try this. This is great. And then someone, well, yeah, I've got this too, but I found this. I tried this drug, ivermectin, and this works just as well too. Try this. And here's the different amounts per weight of the people, and here's how to do it. And you want it in, this day in treatment, you want to get it early, and it works, and then away you go. And that's how COVID could have been cured in about 4 months, just by the free access of information. That's how powerful it is.
Right. Yeah, and, free access to information and freedom to allow these professionals to use their expertise is something that we need to push for strongly in this country.
And doctors make mistakes, and it's not perfect. That's why they call it practicing medicine. It's an art. Difference between an art and a science, and a science has all these provable, observable facts and consistent results. Medicine, because the human body is infinitely complex and everybody is different from everybody else. And medicine has to be tailored to the individual because everybody is different from everybody else. It's an art. As I used to talk to my students when I was flight instructing, I said, because landings are complex. I said, landing is an art. Designing the wing is a science because we've got our Reynolds numbers and all the things that they use to design wings. I mean, that's pretty well known. The laws of physics govern the type of wing that you put on the airplane and away you go. But landing, because of all the complex factors of wind, atmosphere, temperature, gravity, altitude, all the other factors that go in. So landing is an art because there's too many variables. There's too many things that you have to work with and instantaneously create. And doctors, same thing with the human body. There are so many variables in the human body that you can't make it a science completely. It has to be part art. And art means some things are going to work and some things aren't. And the things that work, you want to be able to share as quickly as possible so that people can practice their art as well as they possibly can.
No, I agree. And I would add that I think that, that particular bill in California not only challenges the art of practicing medicine, but I think it's anti-science as well, because a major tenet of science is that you challenge what was previously accepted as a law or a theorem. So when you stop allowing people to challenge what is the accepted norm, you are by definition performing in an anti-scientific way.
Yeah. I know we're a little off topic, but I think this is worth discussing, that it seems to me that a national healthcare, a government-imposed healthcare, is not being done directly. In other words, they're not nationalizing all the private medical hospitals, doctor's offices, and putting under a government pay system, but they're doing it by default through the control of information, through the access to different care, through the blocking of care that you might want. It's coming out of Washington and the CDC and the NIH and the FDA. They're saying what medicines they will reimburse for Medicare. And of course, that means everybody else. The CMS, the Center for Medicare Medicaid Systems Funding, is really controlling this. And we've heard reports from different folks. They're giving about $120,000 per death. So in other words, if you go through the whole thing, the remdesivir death march, ventilator death march, and through the coroner, they're giving money for that. Whereas if you cure somebody with $20 of hydroxychloroquine, that's looked upon as misinformation. That's looked upon as bad. They're demonizing that. They're actually, it's the point where doctors are losing their licenses over that. And the overwhelming evidence to me is the fact that the people getting the early treatments are still here. The ones that are getting the remdesivir ventilator death march are not. So you tell me, Are we getting a nationalized system that's killing people and rewarding with huge financial rewards and blocking early treatments that are cheap and affordable and that work? This is a horrible situation here. I mean, we haven't talked about this, but this is what we spent a lot of time on over the last couple of years. De facto national health from government dictates, not necessarily nationalizing the entire health industry.
Yeah, and I am not sure how much of it is actually conscious decisions to try to nationalize healthcare versus the innate ineptitude of the federal government.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's probably a little bit of both.
Well, that's a recurring theme here. How much is incompetence and how much is evil by design? I tend to lean more to the evil side rather than the incompetent side, but we talk about it all the time. So it's perfectly valid way to look at it. Yeah. You got more time or you got to go? How are we doing?
Let me do one more quick one just because okay. This one I really like and it's near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. So a Ukrainian lawmaker was in D.C. I think it was this past week. And he is part of the Servant of the People Party within the Ukrainian parliament. His name is Marian Zablotsky. I'm sure I massacred that. So,
no, I think he did pretty well, actually.
Any Ukrainian listeners who are out there, please don't call in and tell me how badly I massacred the name. But if you want to tell me how to pronounce it, I'd be happy to learn how to do that. He was in D.C. and has been talking about putting a law in place in Ukraine which would mirror our Second Amendment. He tried to before the Russian invasion, and his bill failed in Parliament. And now he's pushing again to do it. And, you know, he said that, you know, in his opinion, the bill that he put forth was killed primarily by the pro-Russian members of the parliament because they wanted to deny Ukrainians the right to have firearms when the Russians invaded. And he also talked about the fact that firearms weren't per se illegal to have in Ukraine even before the invasion, but mostly it was handguns that were allowed to be possessed in Ukraine and not long guns. And, you know, he said that, you know, most of what you would need to repel an army like the Russian army are long guns like Kalashnikovs. And so one of my favorite quotes from one of his interviews that he gave is he said, so now with the famous Bucha massacre, for example, I'm pretty sure that no massacre would have ever happened if residents of Bucha had firearms. They had zero. So I want to arm those regions that have been most affected and who understand the need for arms.
Now, that's so really important. I mean, the Warsaw Ghetto, same thing, you know, in Poland in the 1940s when the Nazis came in. You know, and the Jews had firearms, and they did resist as long as possible, but they didn't have enough and enough arms. And of course, you're fighting the, you know, the whole German army. It's a whole different situation. But, yeah, in fact, they talked about this, that, you know, donate arms. Civilians should have arms. They were arming their – in fact, we were saying, well, wait a minute, how come the Brandon's advocating arming the Ukrainian citizens and not our own? You know, against the invasion that we have from illegals crossing the border that they're bringing in. So the inconsistencies and the hypocrisies are kind of legion at this point. But that's great that they, you know, if they get, watch Brandon. See if the Brandon insurrection actually supports a Second Amendment in Ukraine so they can defend themselves in Russia while at the same time appointing absolute, you know, automatons to the ATF to try and take all our guns away.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And, you know, it's sad that, as is so often the case, you have an entire country that mm-hmm. doesn't fully realize how important the Second Amendment is to a nation until it's too late and they've been overrun by another occupying force.
Yeah, but you know, you remember when I was talking about either 100,000 or 500,000 AR-15s to Ukraine or to Taiwan, you know, I mean, that'd be something that we could do pretty easily. It wouldn't cost that much. And how much would a deterrent, 500,000 AR-15s, you know, in the hands of civilians. You know, you can do it through the gun clubs, and people would sign up and they take their classes and they'd learn very quickly. Wouldn't take a long time. You know what, probably, what, 3 or 4 hours of instruction and you'd be good to go. You know, and what you didn't learn then, you'd learn on the battlefield, you know, and yeah. I don't know how much. Well, how much time does let's say when training Afghans, you know, or training Iraqis or anybody that the U.S. military has trained in basic firearms, when you're training another country's citizens, how long? And I don't want to get into classified stuff, but how long does it take to make someone, you know, competent enough? You know, they're not sniper rifles, but you know, but competent enough to handle, say, an AR-15. Oh, I don't know if you give them M16s or whatever, fully automatic, but just a semi-automatic rifle. How long does it take to get someone in another country somewhat competent enough that they're not going to shoot themselves or their fellow, you know, forces, and God forbid us. But yeah.
Well, you can make someone be fairly competent with an AR-15 in a couple of hours. You know, it doesn't take a lot of training to be able to safely handle an AR-15. And it doesn't take a whole lot of training to become reasonably accurate with an AR-15, you know, if you're talking about, you know, near to intermediate range. You know, I could take someone in 2 hours and make it so that they could engage targets pretty well out to about 200 yards.
Which is, in a battlefield situation, you know, most of the weapons are shorter range anyway. No, most of the that's why we're getting a little specific here, but the M14, the Battlefield 308 rifle, was abandoned because those long range, you know, 500, 800 yard shot opportunities didn't exist a whole lot. Most of the battles are done what, within 100, 200 yards of the opposing forces.
Yeah. And it would vary, right? So if you're in an area with a lot of vegetation, you're not going to get long shots because you're just not going to be able to see targets out at distance. And the same thing if you're in an urban environment. You're just going to have buildings and other obstacles that are going to be in the way, so it's going to be difficult to take those long shots. You know, if you're out in Montana or Wyoming, then, you know, you could be taking, you know, a 1,000-yard shot. Because you can see
with
that
your
far.
Barrett 50 or some of the other longer range. What is it, the three? What's that? That Cheyenne, Shylock, Shy something or other. It was, you know, the caliber I'm thinking of. 338.
No.
You know what I mean? Shytec.
338. Oh no, I don't know that one. I guess.
Okay, that's a new one.
Okay, I thought you were talking about the Lapua for a minute.
No, but there's another one. There's like a better one, you know, like a stronger one. You know, bigger casing, bigger, more powder. But I think it's 338 caliber.
Right. Well, and again, the good thing with the AR-15 is it is a, in terms of rifle, a fairly weak cartridge. So you don't get a lot of recoil. So it becomes very easy to train someone fairly quickly to be fairly accurate. The military, you know, considers the maximum effective range of those weapons, depending on which service you're in, you know, about 400 yards. But you're not going to take someone in a few hours and have them effectively engaging targets out that far,
but
200 yards, right. But 200 yards, you could easily do in a few hours. If you were good at giving instruction and they really listened to what you were telling them, you could have them safely shooting and engaging targets out about 200 yards in a few hours.
Yeah. So the point I was trying to make is that if all the gun clubs or they set up organizations in the Ukraine and the military soldiers were training civilians, you know, in group classes, you know, and you did this, you know, months ago, you know, as soon as the Russians started, you know, putting troops on the border, you know, because they had their several months of prep, you know, we could have sent over 500,000 AR-15s. They could have distributed those, trained people in their use, and had civilians armed all over Ukraine with AR-15s, that would have been a huge deterrent for us. And it would have taken, I don't know, a couple months, 2 or 3 months, but they had that time because they knew when the Russians were coming. It wasn't like a Pearl Harbor thing. I mean, the Russians basically announced they were coming by putting all the troops on the border. So if they started that at a reasonable time, Ukraine could have had a whole lot of civilians trained in basic AR-15 defense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you didn't have a training program, if they just would have had this ingrained right to keep and bear arms and had whatever kind of long guns, you know, you want them to have, you know, they didn't all have to be AR-15s. They didn't all have to be Kalashnikovs. Mm-hmm. It could have been whatever they had, but if they had shot them and were familiar with them and fairly accurate with them, this would have been much more challenging for the Russian soldiers.
Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, it's not worth doing. My favorite example being Switzerland. Everybody says, well, Switzerland was neutral. That's why the Germans didn't invade them. Well, that's a bunch of BS. You know, Holland, Belgium, Poland, Norway. Who else was neutral? You know, most of Europe was neutral. Yeah, they didn't want to be invaded, but they didn't have that option because they had lowlands and the people were not armed. Switzerland has two things in their favor, mountains, and one of the, I think the national sport in Switzerland is shooting. So everybody had a rifle. You know, you combine mountains and an armed population. There's not a lot of places for an army to go and certainly not, you know, a lot of places that they can hide. And I think the Nazis did try to take part of Switzerland. And you don't hear about that a lot, but there were armed forces through Italy, I think, that came into Switzerland partially and were repelled by the Swiss. But, you know, there's where an armed population deterred, at the time, the greatest military force in Europe, you know, Nazi Germany. Go forget that, Jim.
Yeah, and, you know, there are probably, I would guess, other reasons why Switzerland was not taken. And, you know, I think part of it had to do with the fact that there was no huge center of population there. There was no real industry that the Germans would have wanted or needed. So, you know, it was what I would consider a target that you would bypass. You know, they're not going to really cause you a lot of problems. And the gain that you get by taking it is not worth even the time of going in and doing it.
Yeah, that's the thing. And there's calculation involved with that. Josh is back on the line. See if he has a make his line live. See if he has a comment or question for you. Glad you have some extra time because we're missing Derek. And you know I wanted to talk about, you know, the latest inflation report and all the other things happening. But we'll get that next week. He's off on vacation again. Josh, you have a question for Jim or a comment?
Yes, sir. Do you think that Switzerland's Swiss Guard guarding the Vatican has any play as to Switzerland not being touched?
I don't know that would have had that much of a play in it, just because I don't think that Adolf Hitler was a particularly religious man. So I don't think he really cared that much about the fact that the Swiss Guard was in the Vatican. I think that he intentionally did not try to occupy Vatican City because he did not want to incur the wrath of the Catholic population around the world.
Italy was an ally too. I mean, Italy was allied with Germany.
But he could have easily gone and just said, look, we're going to take over Vatican City and had the Italians do it. But they chose not to. And I think they chose not to because you don't want to cause such a huge religious group around the world to immediately become enraged and start to join into the fight. So I think that they did the calculus that was something that was just simply not worth doing. And I think they probably did the same with Switzerland. The other thing that I think Switzerland had going for it is, you know, they were the center of banking even, you know, back in World War II. And you don't really, if you're trying to be a world power, you don't want to, you know, upset the world banking center while you're doing that, if you can avoid doing it. So,
Especially if you have credit for munitions and military stuff. All right. Well, let's whatever time you have, let's bring it back a little closer to home here. You're a director of Florida Carry, and we really haven't talked about that a whole lot. Do you have any news of what Florida Carry is doing? Any pursuing of not only open carry in Florida, constitutional carry, but also some of the ideas that we have, you know, on the show here, some of our bills, you know, tax deductions and credits for firearm purchases, especially for low-income people, silencers or suppressors so people can defend themselves and not lose their hearing, all the different things that we have, you know, in terms of Second Amendment advancing bills, reverse the background check where you have the prohibited list on a computer and people just show their driver's license with picture. And if you're not on the prohibited list, that background check. You know, all the things that we talked about here, anything moving on those, any chance of it, any chance of getting other Florida carry directors on to talk about these and how much, you know, lobbying and things can you do? Or are you guys nonprofit and you're sort of restricted in how much you can do? What's
no,
going on
we
there?
Actually we do lobbying in Tallahassee.
Right.
We will be back in Tallahassee again this year.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we can get some traction with the new leadership to try to get constitutional carry at least discussed and brought up in mm-hmm. committee. And I think Governor DeSantis would favor that. I think it would help him if he has presidential aspirations. And, you know, I have no doubt that he does, even though I haven't spoken to him directly about it. But
I think he's already running.
I'm certain. Right. I'm certain that he does have that. And I think, you know, it's very hard to run as a constitutional conservative when you came from a state that doesn't have constitutional carry and you were just the governor of that state and mm-hmm. half
That's
the states
true.
And half the states have constitutional carry. So by definition, now mm-hmm. you come from a state that is in the lower half of protecting a direct fundamental constitutional right. So I think it's something that he would really like. And I'm hoping, and we are still, you know, doing work, you know, to try to talk to legislators to find out if there's a way that we can at least bring the bills up and make legislators take a stance one way or another. And,
yeah.
you know, if they vote no, then they vote no. And, okay, then let's go out as voters and punish those who voted no at the ballot box in the next election. But let's at least get them on the record of what they believe in. A lot of the other things you talk about are things that are not going to be able to be done at the state level because they are federal laws that impact them. So, you know, when you talk about suppressors, we have no laws in Florida regarding suppressors. So the only law you have to, the only laws you have to abide by are federal. And I think there may be some push if the Congress flips in the midterms to try to at least start working towards having suppressors become legal. It's probably not going to happen in the next few years because I think that President Biden would veto any legislation. So unless we
He just swore on my show. You can't say that. What's his title? Come on, Jim. I'll give you another chance. What's his title?
Sorry, that's the old military guy in me.
Oh, yeah.
So whether I like him or not. I just don't think we're going to have mm-hmm. enough of a sweeping win in the midterms to be able to override a veto. So while there could be some discussions about it, I don't think anything's going to happen there. Now, something could happen in the courts. And so, you know, that I'm sure is being worked at least somewhat behind the scenes by some of the larger national organizations. You know, we will continue to bring court cases in Florida to try to advance Second Amendment rights in Florida. And, you know, I think you may see some decisions in some of our court cases that are going on now coming out in the near future. And we should have a couple of more cases that we'll be announcing that I just can't talk about right now because we haven't mm-hmm. filed anything yet. And so we don't discuss any of our pending litigation until we actually file a case.
No, I don't do that. But I got Chappie in the line who's going to tell us about a little bit of his shooting competition stuff. But I also want to see if he wants to comment on some of the things we're talking about here. My personal thing is always advance, always go forward, always be on the offensive. And so if there's any way to introduce these concepts, and even if they don't pass in Florida, the other states who are competitive, who already have constitutional carry might go, hey, I like that. You know, the hearing defense bill or the hearing preservation self-defense act, you know, or something like that. You know, there are ways to do this or, you know, the low income access to self-defense rights acts, you know, so I mean, we can come up all kinds of names for these things. Right. But in other words, tax credits, tax deductions for especially lower income folks. So they have, as the liberals say, you know, access to quality firearms and ammunition and the Preservation of Hearing Act. You know, there's all kinds of things we can do. In fact, wasn't there a big lawsuit for soldiers that were that lost hearing because of these defective so-called hearing protectors. You know, that's a huge one too. We haven't talked about that.
Sorry, I didn't get that. My hearing's really bad.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's because you know, well, the guns are loud. You know, and that's something we should. I don't want to address a big thing on it now, but that's something we should definitely talk about. But you know, in terms of getting on the offense, these are things that I think Florida Carry could look at. And again, legislation doesn't have to pass to be effective, because another state may pick it up. You know, other people running for office may pick it up. Like Jerome Bell, who's running for Congress in Virginia, has endorsed a few of our bills already. He's the only person running for Congress doing that. Matt Gaetz, I hope you're listening. You know, and so these things happen. You never know. I take victories wherever I can find them. But it'd be nice to see Florida Carry come out, you know, for bills that may not even exist yet. So it'd be a great idea if we had hearing protection. It'd be a great idea. Or for places we do have bills. You know, let's support tax credits for low-income folks so they can exercise their Second Amendment rights. There's so many things that could be done that aren't even being thought of. Everybody's doing the basic reaction. You know, it's the reactive legislation. I want to be on the offensive. I want to be pro-Second Amendment, but introduce things that no one else is even thinking about yet. That's where I want to
go. And I like that idea. But again, when you're talking about your Hearing Protection Act, that's something that has to be done at the federal level, right?
Okay.
There's nothing I can do in Florida that will affect that, because I don't have any law to repeal in Florida. There are no statutes in Florida regarding suppressors.
You don't have to repeal it. Yeah. We've already got one that's pro. because that wouldn't make sense. Yeah, because you don't have to – the law doesn't exist that stops it. Okay.
Right. Yeah, right now there's nothing in Florida that prevents you from having that. It's a federal law that prevents you from –
Well, then how about medical marijuana? You know, it's against federal law to have marijuana. It's a what do they call it? A scheduled or I forgot what it's
scheduled
what
one.
Chappie, thanks. Come on in here. What do they call it? It's a scheduled drug. It's a drug you can't have, and yet Florida has medical marijuana. I think it has. I don't know where it stands on recreational, but there's a place where the states are defying the federal government. Chappie, tell me more. What's the? I don't know how this works. I should talk to Chansey. She's an expert on this.
Correct, but however, when you fill out the 4473, there's that new little section they put on there, since the ATF 4473 is federally over trumps whether your state has a recreational or medical. So
what's the new form
you on is falsified. Actually, I have one right in front of me.
I love it. This is live radio. I just happen to have a copy right in front of me here.
I had to run a background check on a customer earlier, so...
Uh-huh.
Actually, so if you go down to question number 21, are you an unlawful user of or addicted to marijuana or any depressant, stimulant, narcotic drug, or any other controlled substance? Warning, the use or possession of marijuana remains unlawful under federal law, regardless of whether it has been legalized or decriminalized for medical or recreational purposes in the state where you reside. So, if you say yes, then you can't get a firearm. If you say no and you do have the medical marijuana card or recreational, whatever, then I think they'll get you on falsifying.
Are they cross-checking? Is anybody cross-checking as part of a background check whether someone has a medical marijuana card in their state, or are those records kept separate?
I'm not sure about here, but supposedly when you do the background check, like I know I heard people in Illinois, then the two systems talk. And it'll just come back unapproved, or it'll just show pending for a long time.
Oh,
yeah, I don't think in Florida that would show up. The problem that you run into in Florida is, in addition to the fact that you've falsified that form, and since you have falsified that form, you have illegally purchased a firearm.
Correct.
There is also a statute in Florida that makes it illegal to own or possess a firearm if you are federally prohibited from owning or possessing a firearm. So if you do have your firearm and it's not cross-checked and you do have to use it and you do get arrested and they do go through your wallet and find a medical marijuana card, then you have demonstrated that you are a prohibited person federally, and because of that, you can be charged under Florida law with illegally possessing a firearm.
That sucks.
Correct.
People don't want to get treated, you know, and this is like you can't have hydroxychloroquine to cure COVID. It's that same kind of thing. You know, the government's telling you what, not only, you know, forcing you to take the medications that they want, not take the medications they don't want you to take, and then now they're putting it with firearms. You know, it's like if you don't register for selective service, if you're a male, which of course is discriminatory right there, then you can't get student loans. You know, they say something totally, or if you don't pay your child support, you lose your driver's license. Yeah, go ahead, John.
I will tell you that, you know, I am appalled that the Florida Department of Law Enforcement and the Attorney General of Florida have not arrested our Commissioner of Agriculture, who has said very, very publicly that she possesses a medical marijuana card and that she owns firearms.
Ooh, there's a campaign for Florida carry. Let's get it out there.
So I've been calling for that for a while. But no one wants to put their hand on that third rail, I think.
And what's the third rail? You don't want to go after Nikki Fried?
Arresting Nikki Fried. And
why not?
Well, I think part of it is the Republicans don't want to turn Nikki Fried into a martyr in Florida for various groups. And, you know, publicly arresting her would cause a lot of Democrats to coalesce together because they would say that it was politically motivated. But there would also
and she's
be
a woman.
Lot of,
and we can't
but there would also be a lot of gun
Republicans.
Owners. Right. Yeah. But there would also be backlash from a lot of pro Second Amendment groups who mm-hmm. say that, you know, it shouldn't be illegal to own and possess a firearm if you have a medical marijuana card.
Yeah.
And so I think politically these offices are just kind of backing off and saying, this is one that we're just not going to touch. Now, if Greg Penglis were to come on the radio and publicly make the same statement that she made, you would probably get a knock at your door.
Yeah.
But there's different rules for politicians than there are for you and I.
Well, speaking of which, and I'm going to get chapping in just a second here, but the whole, I was thinking about this with this whole disinformation bureau that's coming up in the Department of Homeland Security. So when you come for me, guys, just spell my name right. That's all I ask, okay? You know, if you're going to arrest me for all the things that I say, because you're a bunch of Marxist, you know, communist hacks, you know, Mayorkas number one, talking about we're controlling the border, talking about illegal aliens as non-citizens yet, you know, all this other stuff. You want to come for me? I'm right here. We had a lot. Our show's just in the last little week, a few days have been pretty interesting. We're calling for the Speaker of the House to be nationally elected. We're saying that the Trump electors need to be brought forward. The Brandon electors need to be dumped. And the actual electoral count is 316 for Trump and 222 for Brandon. So, I mean, if you want real information, what they're going to call disinformation, all you have to do is just listen to my show. We're blatant about it. We're just going to tell you right out there what the truth is. And to them, truth is disinformation. And so, yeah, you know, that's P-E-N-G-L-I-S. Get it right, fascist stormtroopers. On that note, we should get to Chappie. Jimmy, welcome to stick around as long as you want. We've got another, well, I don't know. I've got 2 hours scheduled, so I had a little extra time for this one, but I'll try and keep it to my normal three because we got about an hour in the first time. Chappie, welcome to the show. What's going on? What's happening? I know you've been on for a bit.
Not much.
Go for it.
That's right. Well, just got back from Talladega from the CMP, Civilian Marksmanship Program, Talladega Marksmanship Park.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best range I've ever shot at.
Is it like the Masters? Is it like the Augusta version?
Yeah.
Of
yeah,
shooting?
I
okay.
Think, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is definitely the Augusta of the shooting ranges. So went there and shot the World Speed steel shoot. Of course, the shot
how fast are you?
Each other.
How fast are you?
I shaved off my total time 5.4 seconds out of all the 8 stages because it goes on your total time. So and I shot my pistol caliber mm-hmm. carbine. I haven't really competed with that in a long time, so I did pretty good. It was fun, and I didn't go in there with like, oh, I'm going to win this whole thing. I just went in there to have fun, and I shot pretty well. So met a lot of people. It was really well organized, but the range is absolutely amazing, minus the fact that
mm-hmm.
it's a drive to Talladega, and there's nothing around there. So
where is
the night before Talladega. in Alabama.
Where's Talladega?
So it's
Alabama.
I think it's east of east of Birmingham. So it's a drive. It's a drive up there, and it's middle of nowhere. It's right outside the racetrack as well. So.
Yeah, I heard about this. They had the big speedway. Yeah. They had the big event last weekend, didn't they? Talladega, what is it, 500 or something?
Yeah,
Daytona?
500, yeah.
Ooh.
So, but there's nothing around there. I mean, Anniston, I think, is the closest town, but I drove the night before, stayed in another town about an hour away from it. So still had to get up early, drive another hour to get to it. And then once you get there, you have to do – you watch the safety briefing because it's part of the range thing. Just they want to keep track of who's coming on the range and that you're following in the rules. Even if you're just a spectator, you have to take this little safety, watch the safety video and get the card. But yeah, absolutely amazing. You saw the best of the best there. Now today though, and actually probably yesterday it really started though, a lot of the grandmasters such as Gatlin and Taren, they'll be starting to shoot today, Saturday and Sunday. So, And supposedly, depending if the cameras work, if you go to USPSA.live, they'll have live coverage of the event. Basically, it's going to look like a Facebook Live event, which, I think they could probably do a little bit better with the media coverage. But
Me.
It's amazing.
I'll do a shot-by-shot commentary as opposed to a play-by-play.
That's
and now stepping up
to
the line. I do it.
That's what they need, a lot of people. So.
Yeah.
What else was amazing there? Yeah, just the bays were amazing. You know, everything is set up with a laser level since this is Worlds. Everything has to be the proper height from where you're at to where the plate is downrange. It was good.
Go ahead. I was going to say, walk us through an event because we got people listening in various parts of the world that will never be able to even own a handgun or even fire one, let alone compete with one. So, and for them, I'm sorry, we're going to try and change that. We'll have our international divisions as the Center for Citizen Legislation Worldwide gets going. But just for people here who've never actually been to a shooting event, you know, let's go from showing up to getting your guns ready to walking up to the line. How does it all work? How does one compete?
Yeah, so. There are people from, all around the world there since the world event. But so basically, of course, showing up, you register several months in advance, which once this opens up, it apparently crashed the system. So there's a lot of computer errors going on. And so once you finally get in, you get your date that you're supposed to shoot and your time. So there's things called AM flights and PM flights. You either shoot in the morning, then there's a lunch break where you shoot the PM flight, which started at 1:30. Until you finish, typically, I think everybody finished about 5:30, 6 o'clock. So then you get put in a squad, and in your squad, there's typically up to 10 people. Now, if there's some people shooting two guns in your squad, that counts as an additional person. So I think total we had 5 in ours or 6 altogether. I was the only person not shooting two guns, which meant I ended up doing a lot of painting. So in between each person shooting, you go down to repaint steel targets, but look at the back.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought you had like an easel up there. You were doing like you have one of those berets you put on, and you were doing like a nice little art sketch of the event. I'm just teasing you.
That probably would have been a lot easier. I wouldn't be as tired. So you go in, of course, you check in the CMP. You sign in. You have to watch a safety briefing. You get your card. Then you check into the steel challenge desk. They'll reconfirm what division you're shooting, what classification. Who's all in your squad, and then they'll tell you to go down to the range. So now you drive down, and you can rent golf carts too as well to drive down to where you're going to shoot. But you go down there, again, amazing setup. They had all the bays. So in Steel Challenge, there are 8 stages. And like I said, they never change. So one's called Smoke and Hope, which is one of the fastest stages.
Smoke and Hope?
Smoke and Hope, so it has 4 huge plates and then 1 stop plate. So you go down there and you check in with your squad that you're shooting, and they'll reconfirm again on the tablet, the scoring tablet, that what you're shooting. So then they call out the shooting order, and now you're going up to the line and shoot. While you're up there, it's called you shoot 5 strings. So there's 4 plates and a stop plate. So you shoot that's 1 string. Prepare for your next string, shoot that, and there's five strings. They throw out your worst time out of the each string of the whole stage. So you shoot your four good strings count. So after you finish, then everybody goes down there, repaints the target, comes back, and the next shooter shoots. During that time, after you get done shooting, you reload your magazines. Either now you help paint or you get ready when it's your turn again for that same stage if you're shooting two guns. Mm-hmm. So this is where I ended up having to paint a lot, because after somebody else would shoot, they'd go back, load their mags, and then get their second firearm ready, shoot the second string where I was sitting there. I was done, but now I painted a lot. So I got closed my exercise rings in that day. So so then you go, after that one's finished, then you go down, you go to the next stage and next stage and next stage. But also within the stages too, they have people from USPSA/Steel Challenge, you know, all the leadership out there, they're out there checking on everybody, you know, kind of meet and greet, handing out snacks. And then they had one bay where it's all the vendors. So they had an ammunition vendor there. They had there were these shooting safety glasses, which a lot of people in the sport, USPSA and other shooting sports, use the Hunter's HD Gold. And the great thing about Hunter's HD Gold is Brian, who helps run the company, he'll let you borrow a pair of the entire match so that you can see if you like them or if they're comfortable. And if you don't, you can give them back, and, you know, they don't really care. They're glad that you got to try them, and they can they'll work with you too. Maybe you didn't like their frames. Maybe you can – and then he'll talk to you about, hey, you can send in a frame of some sunglasses that you like, and then they can put some lenses in there. They also had Grizzly Ears, which is a electronic hearing protection company, so they had those there, and then some other food vendors. So you're
hey, let's get them all supporting Action Radio. This would be great. You know, look at the eyeglass people and the hearing people. Let's tell them what we do here. Maybe they'd like some of our citizen legislation, particularly in terms of background checks, tax credits for people to buy guns, especially if they're low income, changing the registration, the background check, so you just show your driver's license, and if you're not on the prohibited list. You know, some of these companies, you know, I'd love to advance this. I mean, yes, this is a shameless plug I'm making right now, but there are companies who would do that, who would back us if they simply knew what we were doing, that we're trying to advance these things. It would help them, it would help the customers, it would advance the Second Amendment, it would get people thinking of things they haven't thought of before, but it really would allow us, you know, to be able to get the message that we have here out further, and people if they learn about these bills, I think they'd be a lot more likely to share them, and, you know, success, nothing succeeds like success, as they say. So the more people that do this, if they start talking about it at the range, hey, we got a citizen bill that does this, you know, I mean, just people just talking. You know, I'd love to increase the dialogue to include some of the things that we talk about here on a regular basis, if we could.
Yeah, absolutely. So after you finished, then there's usually a lunch break, because some people did shoot twice that day. But we kind of ran over a little bit on time. I didn't understand it. Somebody was saying it's either Alabama law or the range rules that they can't send the first range or first bullet down range until 9 o'clock. So I'm not sure if that's an Alabama law somebody was mentioning, or if that's the CMP's rule that they can't send bullets down range until 9.
Is that a noise abatement thing or something? Yeah. Well, here's something.
Probably.
Part of the reason I asked you the question is because I don't think people realize how much goes into a shooting event and how little time you actually spend shooting. That was one of my biggest criticisms of events, and why I did some, but I didn't do it all the time, is because, you know, you've got an entire day. You've got like an 8, 9, 10-hour day sometimes, and your shooting time is like a minute, maybe, especially if you're fast.
Yeah.
And that would be several events.
Oh, yeah.
You know, your total shooting time would be a minute of an 8-hour day. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're going there to set up and everything, and then you shoot for 1 minute. That's USPSA, you do a little bit more. Well, it all depends, actually. I think Steel, you shoot more rounds. But
Yeah. Maybe 2 minutes.
It goes
you know,
fast. Yeah.
But you're done to like, what, 10, 12 seconds or less, a lot of these events? Maybe a little bit longer. You know, I'm just trying to get an idea. Point being, there's a whole lot of stuff, and you're shooting. It's over. The shooting's like a small part of it. I mean, that's why you go to the competition. But be prepared. Be prepared to wait. You know, wait your turn, wait for your event.
Be prepared to wait. Be prepared to
wait. Wait at the line.
Pace and reset at targets. You know, it's just part of the sport, you know, and everything else. But yeah, And then, you know, you have people like Gatlin here shooting like 5 or 6 guns this weekend. So,
I want to see good. Yeah. Yeah, I got Josh on line. I muted his line because he had some background noise. And so you always want to watch your background noise. Mute your own phone. I won't have to do that. Let's see if Josh, do you have any questions on competitions? Is that something you ever thought of? I don't know how active you are, if you are shooting at all.
The competitions that I played in, it was some kind of rifle. It was a 7.62, 5.56, or I don't know. But, yeah, you had to have a rifle. You had to shoot at least 3 times. You had to have a sidearm, at least a 9mm, and shoot at least 3 times. And then you have, like, a little 22, and you had to shoot at least 3 times. But, yeah.
Sounds like a 3-gun match.
No, it was kind of a cartoon thing. Like, it was ridiculous. There was no actual cash prize or anything. It was just, like, people coming out. But, yeah. No, that's actually pretty awesome, though.
Okay.
What was the competition called?
It was the World Speed Steel Challenge. World Speed Steel Competition. Yep.
Okay.
And where was that at?
Every year. Oh, that was in at the Civilian Marksmanship Program in Talladega, Alabama.
Yes, sir. Okay, I appreciate you.
All right. Yeah, we went over that a little bit earlier in the show, so I want to get you all caught up there. All right. So what can I ask you now? I think that's pretty much it, unless you had some questions.
You did mention, though, it was like, the Augusta. You pulled up, and you saw the big sign in the clubhouse and everything, and everything was just amazing. And, of course, when you watch the video, the safety video, it talks about all the ranges.
Mm-hmm.
And even their long-distance range has these electronic scoring systems. So, you get real-time looking at a little TV what your score is. This is, of course, for the long-distance range, not for steel.
Yeah.
But, just absolutely amazing range. I'm definitely going to go back there. But, be prepared for a long drive because there is nothing around Talladega. So.
Alabama, not New Jersey.
Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't have a competition anyway there. Well, here's a question for you, too. With our modern technology, one of the deterrents to, 1,000-yard shooting is that either you have to do a lot of walking or you have to have somebody at the other end with a, with those, like, sliding boards that go up and down. They actually mark the target for you. Is anybody doing any kind of, like, closed-circuit protected TV? In other words, you put a camera, you shelter a camera, you kind of, like, bury a camera or have some kind of deflective metal around it, but you have a camera that's actually focusing on your target, and it will broadcast it to a TV screen back at your 1,000 yards away, back at your stand.
So actually, yeah, the CMP does that's their electronic scoring system that they do. There's a couple systems they use, but yeah, one's like a closed circuit TV that you see your actual target right where it hits. That would definitely save you a lot, especially a lot of time going back and forth, especially for 1,000 yards and everything else. But, yeah, there's definitely state-of-the-art. I know our club is looking, even though we're just only pushing the one range up to 600, we're looking at doing stuff like that.
I'd love it.
600 yards still, yeah. So they're starting to dig ground on that as well. So that would be something, like I said, it'd definitely be nice, especially, 600 yards, just look down at a little TV. Okay, I need to go up or whatever, down on my target, versus walking all the way down there, coming back, making adjustments.
And the way we did it was with the 1,000-yard competitions. We walked back to 1,000 and walked back up again. In fact, one time they just do a random target. They get you between your 100-yard thing, so you didn't know exactly where you were, which is really fascinating. But that was the problem. You shot one round, and you were in the pit for the other people for their round. So it was an all-day event, just to shoot your wait a minute, I've got an hour left. What's going on here? Oh, I just got a 90-second warning. My clock still says another hour, so I think we'll see. I think they're still broadcasting from the previous show. If it goes off the air in 90 seconds, then, hey, we had our fun. end the show now. But if not, we'll just keep going for a bit. But, like, I have a 308 rifle, and I've got the ultimate sniper stock on it, and I want to get myself a range-finding scope on it so that I can shoot 600 yards. When I had a Shepherd at one point, and it was really fun to be able to shoot, 600 yards was actually not that difficult. 800 was a little more difficult. 1,000 was damn near impossible. And I don't know what happens to that last 200 yards. But if you guys can ever get out to 1,000 yards, that's where you separate the men from the boys and the women from the girls, is that extra range. 600 is fun. But that 800 and 1,000, especially if you have a closer TV of focusing on different targets, would be absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's gonna be pretty good. Like, so a lot of people want to see how far they can push their firearm out and their skills. So,
mm-hmm.
So then the only other thing going on next Friday, we will be setting up for our monthly USPSA match at Escambia River Gun Club. And our match is being held May 7th. And we're kind of, like I said, since it's May, we're going to do the May the 4th be with you match. That's kind of our
May
theme.
May the 4th be with you.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, exactly. So if anyone wants to come out, get dressed up in their, their Star Wars stuff, or wear a Star Wars shirt or whatever, we want them to come out. And then at the end of the match, for all our top shooter in each division, we will be giving out some prizes. So it's going to be a good time. It should hopefully be done. The match starts at 9:00. Should be done and out of there by 1:00, so everybody can enjoy Mother's Day, during the weekend. So it's going to be a good time. Hopefully the weather holds up, but we'd love to see anybody out there. They want to come and sign up, they can just go to practicescore.com and look up at Escambia River Practical Shooters. So.
Sounds good to me. Sounds like fun. And I have a little conflict with my clock. I heard the announcement saying that we're off the air. I have another 59 minutes on my clock, but it's like the after show clock, so it's kind of weird. So I have no idea whether they're on the air or not, but give your contact information anyway. I'm probably going to shut down a little bit early today just because, because it's a Friday, everybody's out having fun. And then let's get your Escambia River Gun Club folks on the show sometime too. Let's find out what's happening at the club.
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram, Facebook at chat. It's facebook.com/ChaffeeTactical and at Chaffee Tactical on Instagram. I do everything. I'm a ammo manufacturer, firearm manufacturer, at Tydex Holsters. And I'm also a Class 2 suppressor dealer and manufacturer. So get a hold of me if you need anything else like that. And we're looking forward to seeing you at the range sometime soon, Greg.
I'm working on it. Very soon, probably in the next month or two is what I'm figuring right now. Of course, I know I said that a couple months ago, but life gets busy, but I will be out there soon.
No, absolutely. Yeah, come out, watch if you want to. So.
I will. Yeah. No, I do. I don't watch. If I can't shoot, I'm not going to go. I got to be in the parade. I can't watch the parade. I got to be on stage. I don't go to concerts. I play concerts. I'm one of those people. It's kind of weird.
And that's what we tell people. We're like, well, come watch, but bring your stuff, because as soon as you see everybody, you're going to want to shoot. So, I'll let you know next weekend. And then I was thinking the week after that, we'll probably do some interviews with Gatlin back on air to get his post-match talk and see how he did at this World Speed Steel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. You don't have shooting champions with names like Todd. Karen. It's just kind of funny. Don't mind me.
Yeah. Well, we got Todd Jarrett. You don't have
Jarrett. I was just thinking Gallant, such a great name for a shooter. I mean, for a competitor.
Perfect name for him.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Have a good weekend and keep it posted.
Okay. Thanks, Chappie. You take care. We'll do it next week.
No problem. You
too. All right. See you later. So, again, I have no idea if I'm on the air or not at this point. We've tried. We've got kind of a mystery going on here. I think I am, but I'm not really sure. So I'm going to play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, do a couple of things, and probably close the show off early today because it's Friday, and I had a power failure earlier that canceled my show. And so whenever we have these split episodes, people seem to lose the continuity. And that if you don't catch the second one, you miss it. It gets kind of weird. Anyway, so let me play this for you. Back in a few minutes, and then I'll probably close everything down. All right. And then actually, what I'm going to do is really do a big show Monday, because I'll take this information on these disinformation bureaus here, the European Union bill, the UK bill, and all these information suppressing things, and probably do a really big report on those. But that'll give me the weekend a chance to really review the bills, and I'll have more for you then. All right. Back in a bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers, here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist No. 11 was written by Alexander Hamilton and published on November 24, 1787. My overall impression, once you get past the same old arguments for a national government to rule over the states, you get the impression that Hamilton really isn't all that thrilled to have a new nation to create freedom for Americans, the likes of which no nation has ever seen, and more that he wants to reestablish connections with England and other European monarchies and colonial powers in order so as not to offend them, not to bring about their economic retaliation, and worst of all, to advance the business interests of Hamilton and his rich and powerful friends. I'm not sure he realizes that we won the war for independence, and as such, we get to act as a nation with independence. As always, the Federalists are concerned that the government will break into factions, also known as parties, and the states will break into various separate confederacies, both of which would reduce the powers of the Federalists, who appear to want the Constitution so they can run a strong national government over the states and as representatives of the whole nation to the trading nations of Europe, to which they intend to make all the trade deals, which would be enforced with their growing national government navy. So much for federalism, the separation of powers between the states and the intended national government and the independence of the states at all. It's all in a few paragraphs of Federalist No. 11, surrounded by lots of blah, blah, blah. Hamilton, in a rare moment of clarity, says, "Under a vigorous national government, the natural strength and resources of the country, directed to a common interest, would baffle all the combinations of European jealousy to restrain our growth." The Constitution is supposed to be explicitly against a national government, which is certainly not empowered to direct any idea of common interest, which seems to be designed to say, give us a national government so we can use the power of a national government to get the best deals from our former masters in Europe. Hamilton's biggest fear, it appears, is that the Articles of Confederation will remain and the states remain independent sovereign entities which would be capable of making their own trade deals with other nations. And why not? American companies make their own trade deals with foreign governments all the time. So it's not trade and commerce that Hamilton is worried about. It's his lack of control over that state and independent trade, which is why he wants a strong national government over the states. He says, "But in a state of disunion, these combinations might exist and might operate with success. It would be in the power of the maritime nations availing themselves of our universal impotence to prescribe the conditions of our political existence. And as they have a common interest in being our carriers and still more in preventing our becoming theirs, they would in all probability combine to embarrass our navigation in such a manner as would in effect destroy it and confine us to a passive commerce." In conclusion, Hamilton recognizes the amazing bounty available in the new nation. My problem is that he wants that wealth and power for himself and his political and wealth class, who appear to want the Constitution to enshrine their power over the country in the supreme law of the land. To enforce his national government and push it onto the world, he talks of maintaining a navy strong enough to keep us neutral in any conflict. I'm fine with a strong navy, but I'm with George Washington on avoiding foreign entanglements. So who is Hamilton really talking to in Federalist No. 11? The people or his people? He says, "But in the reverse of this eligible situation, we shall discover that the rivalships of the parts would make them checks upon each other and would frustrate all the tempting advantages which nature has kindly placed within our reach. In a state so insignificant, our commerce would be prey to the wanton intermeddlings of all nations at war with each other, who, having nothing to fear from us, would with little scruple or remorse supply their wants by depredations on our property as often as it fell in their way. The rights of neutrality will only be respected when they are defended by an adequate power. A nation despicable by its weakness forfeits even the privilege of being neutral. Hamilton completely discounts that the states and the citizen militias could defend themselves against foreign invasion. However, the whole point of a strong navy was to ensure foreign invaders never got here, and not as Hamilton appears to want, as adjuncts to their commercial operations and trade. He does make one excellent point, that a nation is despicable by its weakness and forfeits even the privilege of being neutral. Compare our strength and independence in the past to the dependencies of the recent present. So what exactly is the Constitution supposed to do, and who is it supposed to be for? At this point, I have no idea from the Federalists. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. You know, as I talked about with Chappie, we're looking for folks that do want to help us, and corporations can play a huge part in advancing our agenda.
Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements, and we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener, and help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try, even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half-liter water bottle or 16-ounce glass to create a full-power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com.
That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Well, that's kind of what we do here. And again, like I say, I don't know if I'm broadcasting at this particular point or not. It's kind of a mystery. So just in case, I don't want to start a whole brand new topic and then have you miss it. And so what I'm going to do is take the weekend and look over a lot of these new laws that are coming out, like I mentioned earlier, the information suppression, the fact that it'll be illegal to say things that the government doesn't want you to say. And that could be any government. It could be our own U.S. government. It could be the government of the U.K., the British government. It could be the European Union government. All these governments are putting all these, Digital Safety Act, Disinformation Board. They're having all these, what George Orwell would call the Ministry of Truth. In other words, the truth is what they say the truth is, and you have to repeat the truth they say it is. And, it's like red pill, blue pill, matrix. Okay, so what's the truth? The truth is when you take the red pill and you see the world as it is, the blue pill is what they want you to believe. So it should be the blue pill ministry. We could do it that way too. Anyway, there's a lot of things to talk about. It's going to be an interesting weekend to go over these bills and see these laws, and I'll be able to pull out specifically the really dangerous and bad parts of them. So it should be a fascinating time, but don't think it's just happening here. This is a worldwide coordinated effort, just like the vaccine snake oil jab is a worldwide coordinated effort, and all these things are just worldwide. There's just, they keep pushing. So we have to keep pushing back. And again, we write the laws here that can push back. And it your job, very simply, is just to share the show, share the bills, and become a citizen lobbyist and activist so that we can all get this all finished up. Okay, Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And our website for all our laws is www.writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, and we'll be back Monday morning, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock Mountain, 4 o'clock Pacific, and the rest of the world, you guys will just figure it out.